my talks with them have been very positive. Indonesia is a partner with us in the Bali process, the organisation of over 50 countries that are concerned about people smuggling, human trafficking. And Indonesia sees this as as big a problem for them as it is for us. They're a transit country, and there are implications for law and order in Indonesia with the arrival of large numbers from Iran in particular.
Do the Indonesians need more resources to stop the boats? Indeed, do they need money to establish a processing centre there?
Now, we're exploring that with them, and that's a bit outside the scope of my discussions as Foreign Minister. But they do acknowledge the fact that there's been a spike in the number of Iranians leaving Iran and travelling through Indonesia, and in about 50% of recent cases coming onto Australia. This has got implications for Indonesia as much as it has for us. We're not asking Indonesia to cooperate with us in anything that's not in their interest as well.
It makes it quite difficult because with the non-refoulement rules with the UNHCR, Iranians can't be returned to Iran.
Well, in the past we've returned Iranians there, and at the present time Iran's not accepting the return of Iranians, but I see that as not conflicting at all with the convention. The fact is these people are middle-class Iranians. They're leaving their country because of the economic pressures. Some of them produced, much of it produced, I guess, by the sanctions that apply to Iran because of the nuclear ambitions of its supreme leader and its guardianship council. We've got concerns about that, and we'll work with the Indonesians towards a solution that, again, suits them and their interests as much as us and ours.
At the time of the budget, the government commissioned a review of the processing system of refugees in a bid to lower the acceptance rate. Where is that review at?
Cabinet's discussing that. I won't talk about it further, but it's informing government discussions, and it's reflected in the statements I've made on this subject recently.
Through that review process, is Australia looking to tighten the definition of what it is to be a refugee? At the moment, 90% of people who come here by boat are found to be refugees. Will you see?
I think we've got to be more critical and more searching of this. I'm just looking at some figures in front of me now about recent boat arrivals and one struck by the large number of Iranians, Sri Lankans. I wouldn't prejudge any individual claims, but on balance, we've got to question whether people coming from a majority ethnic and religious group are always to be found refugees.
But in this review process, are you actively seeking advice from the UNHCR, or is this going to be a unilateral decision by Australia on what a refugee is?
We're a multilateralist country. We'll always act in consultation with a body like the UNHCR.
To Egypt, Minister, there's been a great deal of civil unrest there marking the first anniversary of President Morsi's election. Will the travel advice for the country change?
Well, I note what the US has done on instructions from Washington alerting American citizens to defer non-essential travel to Egypt. We're talking to the missions of like-minded countries in Cairo, and we're looking at what happens as the protests get underway, and we'll revise our travel advice accordingly. I've got to express the hope that both sides will avoid violence, that the security forces won't overreact, that these protests be regarded as peaceful demonstrations that are part of the new democracy that the Arab world aspires to. We want this to be we hope that this can be a milestone in the evolution of a democracy, a robust democracy in Egypt and indeed throughout the Arab world that can tolerate protest and a competition, a peaceful competition for political power under democratic constitutions.
What do you make of how the Arab Spring is unfolding in Egypt?
I'm full of apprehension about the minorities. I think in Egypt, of the Copts, for example, we've made representations for their protection. But I'd like to think that just as it took Western Europe over a century to render itself a region of robust democracies, so too, after many false starts and much disappointment, will the Arab world. And we've got to work with Arab Democrats. We've got to caution them at every stage in what I hope is an evolution towards democracy, to respect minorities, to respect rights and freedoms, and above all, to trust their people with the capacity to determine who governs them. That's what the Arab Spring is all about, trusting people, moving beyond this busted model, this ruined model of a dictatorship for life.
Will it take 100 years?
Well, we simply don't know.
How difficult is it going to be for Mr Rudd to present an experienced and united team, given that so much ministerial experience now has gone to the backbench or, in fact, is now leaving Parliament?
I've got a different view. I think a turnover like this is very, very helpful. Having new people, younger people, different people come in and grapple with the problems of government.
The polls have shown a bounce in Labor's fortunes. Will the sugar hit last? Labor needs to win more seats than it currently holds to actually win the next election.
For all we know, there could be a falling off in support in subsequent polls and then a recovery during the election when people look carefully at the alternative that Tony Abbott is presenting. Again and again, I think in the weeks ahead, people will look at the alternative and they'll make judgments about that.